From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with a list. Researchers at two Florida-based universities ranked the top 100 housing markets in the country for over and under pricing. Buyers in the city that made the top of the list, Boise, Idaho, are paying a premium of nearly 81%. Meanwhile, buyers in the city that ranked last on the list, urban Honolulu, Hawaii, are paying a discount of about 5%. Where does Rochester fall? Well, the list shows the Flower City comes in at number 53. According to the research, buyers here pay a premium of about 20%. And maybe you've heard the stories from local home buyers about how much over-asking they or other buyers have paid for their new homes. We've heard of houses selling for $100,000 over-asking. In fact, earlier this year, I know someone who sold a house in a Rochester neighborhood, bought it in 2013 for $175,000, listed it for $260,000, got $360,000. 100 over asking. Buyers waiving inspections. The local market has been so hot for so long, even through this pandemic. But is there finally going to be a change? Well, local realtors say that question is still up for debate. Data shows the market is starting to slow a little. But is that a seasonal trend that's to be expected, or is it the sign of a market that is finally losing some of its steam? Regardless, realtors say there is still more buyer than seller activity. There are more buyers than sellers generally. It's a tough market, but it's maybe getting a little easier for buyers. We would love to hear from people's experience this hour, because every time we talk about this, we get so much feedback and there's a push for us to kind of stay on top of these trends. This hour, we're talking to realtors who discuss the trends in the local housing market and what to expect in the coming months. They'll also answer your questions about listing your home or what to expect, at least in the current market, if you're a buyer or a seller. And I'd like to welcome our guests, the president of the Greater Rochester Association of Realtors and an associate broker at RE/MAX Plus, is Lainey Bittner. Lainey, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Evan.
On the phone with us is Jim Yockel, CEO of the Greater Rochester Association of Realtors. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Evan.
And Shawanda McGee is a licensed realtor and founder of She's Dope, a women's empowerment group. Shawanda, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. So, I mean, I don't know, Lainey, I mean, if there's a little bit of hope for the buyers, it's that we didn't think that this trend could continue forever, but here we are in September. Can you give me a sense for what September, what the fall is typically like for buyers and sellers? Is this usually a better time for one or the other?
It's in the, we usually see a dip in the summer, the July-August timeframe. We see less houses on the market. We see less houses under contract during the summer months. And then we actually see a bump back up in the September-October timeframe before the holiday season, which is really our lowest point typically in terms of sales activity, listing activity, things like that. So September-October are usually very good times to get out there and list your house and find something.
Main factor in the market right now, we've been told for most of this year, really in the most of the last few years, it's a lack of inventory. It's volume. There's just not a lot overall on the market. Is that still true?
It is still true. We've seen a little bit of relief, I would say, in the past few months for buyers, and that there is more inventory on the market. But really the past 5-6 years, it's been a seller's market, which means less houses than the buyer demand out there.
So let me ask all three of you, and I'll start with Lainey. What is sort of your headline for the moment, at least at this little snapshot, for buyers and sellers in this market, what's going on?
For sellers, it's still a fantastic time to list your house and to take advantage of the market that we're in. And for buyers, actually now is a great time to buy, for those, especially for those buyers who may have been frustrated, especially earlier in the year, at the beginning of the year when things were a bit crazy. They may see a little bit of relief from earlier in the year.
That's your job to say it's good for everybody.
It is.
It's good to sell.
Listen,
it's good
it
to
is.
Buy.
It's always it's a good time to buy a house.
If it's good to sell, it's bad to buy, right?
not always. Now is a better time for a buyer.
Than it was.
Than it was, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yep. All right, that's fair enough. Jim Yockel, what would you say that the headlines are?
I'll just add to that and say it looks to me like the trends aren't going to change. So if prices are going up, now may be a good time to buy, because next spring might be another similar type of market, far more buyers than sellers, and it may be a little worse next spring.
Okay. And Shawanda McGee, what would you say the headlines are from your perspective?
I would agree with it. I would say, honestly, I think in the next 5 years, for the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to be pretty consistent. Like they said, it is a great time for sellers to list their home, but it's a uniquely great time for buyers as well, seeing that the interest rates are extremely affordable and really low at this time right now.
Okay. And so if you're a buyer, that's another important point here. I mean, interest rates have been also pretty wild here. And that can be, I know listeners may have questions about what that means for buying or maybe even refinancing. There's probably a lot of questions that people have. Listeners, if you've got questions, comments, if you want to share your experience with buying or selling, what have you gone through and where are things standing now, perhaps in your search or quest to sell, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Or you can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Though, of course, if you have a quest to sell and you listed this morning, it's probably sold already. I don't know if that's still true. Shawanda, what are you seeing for sellers? I mean, how much have things changed, if at all, in the last few months for sellers?
As it was said, it's slowed down just a little. And when I say a little, I mean a little. Mm-hmm. But that has a lot to do with the transition right now and from going from summer to fall, you know, vacations are coming to an end. People are still getting prepared and transitioning kids back into, you know, regular school. So listing a home and moving right now isn't prioritized as everything is normally, but it will come right back up once people are settled into, you know, their routines and back to normal. I do believe for sellers it's going to go back up and houses sell within 10 days. This market right now.
Yeah, I mean, 10 days, and what we were hearing Jim Yockel earlier this year was a number of houses not only sold within 10 days, but sometimes within a couple of days, multiple offers, sight unseen, you know, canceled open houses because of a lack of need with three dozen offers in hand. I mean, Jim, how many of those stories are still happening? Has that slowed down?
And what I'm hearing is that has slowed down a little bit. So instead of getting 20 offers, you may get six. Still, you know, full price offers, over asking price offers, but the real intensity has calmed down a little bit. But not to say that means that the market is switched to a buyer's market. I think Lainey's right. It's still very strongly a seller's market, far more buyer activity than homes available. It's just not as intense. So it gives the buyers a little bit more of a chance, take some of the time pressure off, but it looks like it will be that way through fall.
Yeah. And Lainey, what's been your experience in terms of just the over-asking offers coming in sight unseen, you know, that flood in the first couple of days on the market that we were seeing last spring? How much of that are you seeing?
I'm not seeing a lot of sight unseen anymore. I think during COVID, you saw that the lockdown period of COVID at the beginning of the spring last year. You saw a lot more of that. I don't think you're seeing that now. I think people still want to get in the house. That is still the best experience with as many virtual options we have and all the technology we have to show houses to people. It's still best to get in the house to see things that the buyer wants to see, and it still makes a better transaction for both buyer and seller if the buyers get into the house. In terms of things selling quickly, we are, if the houses are in great condition, if they're updated, if they're priced right, which is still very important, you need to price it right and let the buyer demand, you know, move it up if that's going to happen. Houses that I think people are pricing a little bit too aggressively, those tend to sit a little bit longer than the other houses. So you still need to price your house appropriately, and your realtor can help you with that in terms of what makes sense. But those houses that are in great condition, updated, priced right, they're still selling very well, very quickly, and well over list.
All right, let me start taking some feedback because some of the subjects that our guests have brought up are our listeners would like to explore in a little bit more depth here. I'm going to start with Michelle in Rochester. Hi, Michelle, go ahead.
Hi, how are you all doing?
Doing great.
Good, good. I'm not experiencing any of the positive selling. I've had my house with two different realtors since May. Got a couple of bites, and I've made a bunch of upgrades. I haven't seen any movement at all, so I feel like I'm in the twilight zone hearing all these, you know, buying overpriced, sight unseen, all that sort of stuff. That's just been my experience. Thank you.
Well, can you hang for a second there, Michelle?
Oh, sure.
Okay, stay there because I do want to make it clear, if a listener is in Michelle's position, That happens. I mean, there's nothing necessarily wrong with you or anything if you're not in exactly the category that we're talking about here, because there's different factors that go into why a house sells, why it's slower to sell. Sometimes it is the number on it, but sometimes there's other factors at play. So Michelle's in a position where it lists in May. Lainey, I'll start with you. You know, a couple of bites, not really moving. What are the first questions that come to mind for you here?
Well, that's tough, right, without seeing Michelle's house. But, you know, if I were to go in and I'd ask a bunch of questions in terms of those upgrades. But in my opinion, there's, you know, there's generally one reason. It's usually price for a location, price for condition, price for upgrades, right? And so that's the one thing that you can change now is pricing, right? I base it on feedback. What feedback have you gotten from the showings that you've had? What have buyers said that, you know, maybe the reasons why they're not willing to put an offer in on your house? What are some of those factors? Can you change any of those things? If you can, that might be good to do. Mm-hmm. If you change those things, then you can maybe keep the price where it is. But if there are items you can't change, the only thing you can change is price.
Okay.
Right.
Shawanda, what would you say to our caller?
I would have to see the home. But even sometimes it's something as simple as the pictures that are being posted could be a reason for you to lack traffic in your home, because sometimes people want to be able – the house needs to be as clear and as empty as possible, even when you live in there. So, like, family photos, things that are important to you aren't important to others. So they need to see their own things in those homes as well. Staging, lighting, photography, all of those things play a part, and price definitely plays a huge part, especially if you've done upgrades in your property and homes around you aren't valued at the same as yours is valued now. So sometimes that could play a major role in it as well.
Okay, Jim Yockel?
I don't think I can add anything. Those are two great answers.
Yeah, and so, Michelle, anything that you want to touch on before we let you go here? Because, I mean, if it's hard to kind of guess exactly why your house hasn't moved, but do you feel like you know, or you have a guess in your own mind why? Have you heard from people who've taken a look at the house and they've given you any feedback?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that needed fixing, and I'm fixing them right now. And it's a rental, so the pictures are you can't really stage it or have like pretty, you know, empty pictures. But we're doing the best we can, and we're trying to listen to what the buyers are saying. We're fixing what they're saying, but I just feel stuck. But we have lowered the price too.
Well, it sounds like if you're addressing what needs fixed, it's going to move.
Yes.
It's going to get there. And good luck to you, Michelle. Thank you for the phone call. You are certainly not alone. You know, I was sitting here with Lainey Bittner, who had when Michelle mentioned it's a rental, it's harder to stage. I think Shawanda was on the money by pointing out, just think about if you've ever bought anything on Craigslist. I've been bouncing around Craigslist recently. It's amazing the difference between items that are really well photographed and then items that are photographed in what appears to be a dungeon. You know, and there's everything in between,
right.
And it's true for selling a house too. It's true when when animals are up for adoption. Photography really
mm-hmm.
matters.
Yes.
But Lainey, you had a reaction when Michelle mentioned rentals are tough.
It is a little bit more challenging when the house is rented out. You know, you've got obviously the tenants. You can't control the tenants and how they live and how they leave the mm-hmm. the condition of the place. You can't control in terms of, you know, what the arrangement is for showings can be a little bit challenging. So maybe buyers can't get in when they want to get in. So it does come with a little bit more more challenges when you've got something that's rented and you're trying to sell it. And then not to dip into a hot topic here, but with the eviction moratorium, right, then it becomes, you know, that's a whole nother, you know, hot topic that we can get into, which I know we don't want to, but that can also affect people's thoughts on whether or not they want to buy something that's currently rented.
Okay. Let me get to Josh in Fairport next. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah. Hi guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to touch on my particular experience. My wife and my family and I, we moved here to the Rochester area from California just about 15 months ago. So when we were in California, we started looking at houses in Fairport in, you know, Penfield area. And this is, I think, in my opinion, it was right before things started getting completely outrageous. And so, you know, we hooked up with a realtor and we found a house that we liked. And basically we did a virtual walkthrough,
mm-hmm.
like through Zoom. And we got to do it. We got to jump on it. So we all just packed up and moved. I drove cross country and we got this house for just $1,000 over the asking price. And, you know, we went and did like a physical walkthrough just about 2 weeks before we moved in, and gratefully everything worked out just fine. But it was such a wild and crazy experience to do everything kind of remotely and at such a distance. And then as soon as we kind of settled in, we saw that the pricing was just going through the roof and people were kind of scrambling. And so I was just really grateful to have experienced it in that way. So thank you.
And so can I ask you a question about that, Josh?
Yeah.
Because I'm really glad you bring up the way you had to do this, and I wanted to ask our guests about this. There is a lot of pressure when you're buying jeans online, sight unseen, a shirt that you cannot wear. I mean, that's hard enough, right? Like, I've got a weird-shaped body. I've got a bizarre-shaped head. Nothing fits me, and it's hard enough to buy online for clothing. Buying a house, buying a home that you can't walk into until you've bought it is a whole nother level. What was, you know, ultimately it sounds like you felt like this is how we have to do it if we're going to get one. How much pressure did you feel? And ultimately, were there any surprises when you finally walked into it?
Yeah, so there definitely was a lot of pressure, but we were kind of considering the situation that we were in, which we were living in a condo, two-bedroom condo with an ever-growing family. And it was like $2,300 a month with nothing included. And so we were like, we kind of just have to make this move now. And we just did. And then when we got in, you know, more or less the house was good, but there were and continue to be little kind of in the walls and in between the cracks things that we're noticing. Things. And, you know, I got my plumbing diploma last season. I got my heating and cooling diploma this season. And I'm just, you know, I'm trying on all kinds of new hats, and it's a great adventure, I got to say.
Well, we're glad you're here. It sounds like at least it's worked out pretty well for you.
Absolutely, and we're grateful to be here. So thank you.
Thank you,
Josh.
You
did a great job. Thanks.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that, and thanks for calling the show and sharing that experience. And so now let me ask, I'll start with Jim. You know, that pressure that Josh is feeling is not unique. When you have offers being made before people even walk through, whether it's because they live in another state, they're moving, or pandemic conditions before, or even just the pressure of trying to get an offer in, that is a lot on anybody who's trying to buy, especially for the first time, Jim. Would you offer any advice for people who are feeling that pressure?
Yeah, definitely buying a house sight unseen is not for everyone. Circumstances sometimes may dictate it, as we saw with the early stages of the pandemic. But there are people who are more and more comfortable with it. And a lot of that has to do with what Shawanda said. The pictures are better. Video tours are better. 3D imaging of houses is better. And I mean, that's not available in every house. But there are a lot of far more descriptive technical tools that we can use to make it a little bit more comfortable to, you know, feel like you've seen the house. And if you have to move across country, you have to move. That may be the only option. And I'm glad it worked out well for Josh. There are certainly some cases where it doesn't, but it definitely is not for everyone. So if you're feeling pressured, I would say, you know, pause a second, think about what you're doing and make sure it's the right decision for you. Because once you're in, you're in.
What do you think, Shawanda?
I totally have to agree with John. If you feel that much pressure, unless, as he said, circumstances require it, but if you're just out looking to purchase a home, slow down and really dig into your realtor, because they should become your best friend during those times and during those moments. And you should express that to them, like the pressure you're feeling, so they can either walk you through it, talk you through it, talk you off the ledge, or just make it not feel so much pressure, because it should be a joyous and exciting journey to go on. You're buying a home. That's fun. That's something that's worth it. You know, it's building wealth in your family. So it shouldn't feel that way. It shouldn't. You should definitely take a step back if you feel that much pressure. It just may not be the moment or your timing right now.
Lainey Bittner, I appreciate you on this point that you really ought to be able to lean on a realtor and develop a good relationship, because this may be a process that takes some time.
Absolutely.
It may take a lot of different tries and bites at the apple. I think the challenge that people may feel is like, hey, I'm trying to slow down, but I feel like if I'm not willing to put in something sort of sight unseen or that day right away, I got no shot here. That's how it's felt for a lot of people for a while. What do you think, Lainey?
There's definitely a lot of pressure in this type of market for buyers. It's overwhelming, right? And the best we can do as realtors is to take a step back, right? We're the professionals. We're the guide through this whole home buying process. And that's what we're there for. And so, you know, sometimes we play devil's advocate. And, you know, sometimes I show houses and talk about, well, you know, and the pressure, I can see the pressure mounting in my buyers, and I make sure they take a step back. All right, well, you talked about how important the kitchen counter space was for your cooking. Is this actually enough kitchen counter space for you? So asking those types of questions will often help a buyer sort of level set and, right, take a step back and think things through. And to both Jim and Tashanta's point, it's an overwhelming process that right, we're going to guide you through it, and we're going to help you. And our ultimate goal is for you to be a happy homeowner, just like Josh sounds like he is, and not shove you into something just to get you into something. It's making sure it's the right fit.
Lainey, you want to remind me something. One of the things that we tell people is because it's a highly intense market, figure out beforehand what you can and cannot compromise on, mm-hmm. so that you're not making difficult decisions under intense pressure. So if you know going in, we would like this type of layout or this type of size or these type of amenities, but we're willing to give up on, you know, a little smaller house if it has the amenities and the right layout. Figure that out in as much in advance as you can. So if you have to make snap decisions, you've already done the kind of the analysis when it's a little calmer and you can think things through.
Well said. Let me get Keith. Next, Keith is, I don't know where you are today. Keith, go ahead.
No, I'm in my garage right now, but the garage is located in Victor. I used to live in a town nearby, and we decided to move because we each wanted something different in a home. I wanted a three-car garage. She wanted indoor plumbing. And we got into a bidding war on I'm waiting for the laughter, and there's none.
Indoor plumbing, that was a good one. That's good. You do hope that indoor plumbing is a baseline.
As a standard. You've never seen some of the houses I've seen. Well, we got in a bidding war on three houses, and we dropped out. But the one thing that you get the excitement, you get overwhelmed, and then you don't think. And our realtor, you know, he would write these offers with a $5,000 escalation clause. You know, if my offer is X amount, I'll escalate it by $5,000 increments to another level, which is almost like auctioning it off, which is illegal in New York State. But the other thing, the $5,000 was literally an arbitrary number that I don't know who came up. So when we came to the fourth house, I said, well, we're not getting into a $5,000 escalation clause. We'll get into an escalation clause, but a much lower price, you know, for the escalation clause. We ended up paying for the fourth house was a charm. We ended up paying more than asking price, but the asking price was incredibly low relatively compared to other houses we had looked at. So much so, I asked my wife rhetorically, like, I sure hope they cleaned up the murder scene, because we literally thought that's what we were getting into. And the house was, you know, turned out to be pretty good. We paid a decent amount, but we didn't get into a bidding war. And the one thing that we had that does have some weight to it is the conditions. We had no other house to sell. We could take quick possession. We did not want to rent back to the buyer. But everything else worked for everybody's best interest. So I think, you know, if you got three people bidding on a house and the escalation clause is $5,000 rather than, say, $1,000, That in itself is going to drive it up.
Yes.
And, you know, you pay a 6%, almost a 6% commission for the realtor's expenses. But we sold our house by putting a for sale by owner in the front yard, and it was sold in a day. So I saved the fee, and I didn't leave any money on the table, so don't have to worry about that.
Well, Keith,
but you don't see any give back from the realtors on the commission when they're putting no cost in it.
All right, let me let you get back to, I think you're on a roller coaster, or I don't know if you're doing some spackling. Maybe you're playing a Hungry Hippo. Something's going on there, Keith. But I'm going to let you get back to that. But let's try to address. See, Lainey, you can laugh.
Well,
see,
Hungry Hippo, I mean.
It kind of sounds like
I remember
like
Hungry Hippo.
Keith's always doing something. But so there's, I'd love to hear from our guests on some of the points he's raising. So when he talks about an escalation clause, $5,000 escalation clause, or whatever the number is,
right.
And he's raising a few points here. Number one, he says it was sort of arbitrary, but it felt like an auction, which is supposed to be illegal. Escalation clauses, I'm sure, are they legal? Are they common? Yeah. How do they work?
Escalation clauses, you can absolutely use those, and they are common practice these days. It's a tool, right? Not every... Ultimately, the buyer needs to be comfortable with what they're putting forward in terms of an offer, right? If they're not comfortable with an escalation clause, they don't have to write an escalation clause, right? Is your realtor going to kind of walk you through your options, and then whatever is best for that buyer, they should be selecting, okay, I don't want to do an escalation clause, so don't do one. I want to do an escalation clause, and this is the limit I want to pay up to, and this is how far over the other offers I want to go. So that should always be a conversation and a dialogue with the buyer going with their comfort level. So we are seeing a lot of escalation clauses these days because it allows a buyer to put forward an offer and only go up to, you know, beating the other offer. So they may be willing to pay, you know, $50,000 over the list price, but they may not have to because the next highest price is only $25,000 over list price. So it's a way for them to get the house and maybe sort of minimizing what they're paying versus writing a best and final, which is one offer and say, you don't have any other idea what the other offers are. And so I'm willing to pay that $100,000 over list price and you just write it for that. Well, you're probably going to win if no other offer was close to yours.
Okay. Let me just ask a couple of questions about how the mechanisms are for some of this, especially because I think some listeners, if they're back and buying a house for the first time in a lot of years, you may be a little rusty on this. So let's just say a house is listed for $100,000. And you want to make an offer right for the asking of $100,000,
yep.
But you tell your agent, I'm willing to go 10 over, so I'll write that in. Does the seller know that you've got that built in?
If you're writing an escalation clause, yes. So you write the offer, you may start the offer, say, I'm going to offer that seller $100,000 because I can see its point of if that's where the price should be. I'm willing to pay up to $110,000, so that's the cap on the escalation clause. And I'm willing to go over any other offer by whatever, like $1,000.
Okay, but if I'm the seller and I get an offer from Rob Braden, he's saying I'm going to pay the full asking of $100, but I've got an escalation clause up to 10 more. I want that 10 more. I'm going to call Emma Ray Stein and say, hey, I need you to offer 109. You're my friend. Offer 109. You're not going to have to pay it because Rob's already guaranteed to give me 110.
It's a very devious mind, Evan.
I know, but it feels like, but like, is it guaranteed that
never,
that's going to happen?
I have never heard of stories like that, and I hope
you've
I never.
You've never met Emma Ray Stein. She would do that.
I've never heard of someone saying, a seller saying to, you know, somebody else's, go write an offer. So, I mean, you know, there's so much buyer.
It's not a guarantee if you put that in there that you're going to go there.
Well, not necessarily, no, because if the next best offer is $105,000. Right, you're paying $106,000 if you want $1,000 over the next best offer, right? And so, versus writing your best offer. So if I decide not to write an escalation clause and I just go in at $110,000, well, if the next best offer was $103,000, now you've paid $7,000 over what the next best offer was. So
okay.
There's pros and cons to certainly both ways to do it, and some people are certainly more comfortable with one over the other, and it's up to them to decide what's best for them.
And is an offer that doesn't have an escalation clause, Lainey, is that by definition a best and final?
It depends on who you talk to. But, I always think it is, right? In this market, if you're writing an offer with a buyer, you know, I know, I'm going to ask the other, do you have other offers, right? So if I know there's other offers that we're competing against, I'm going to tell my buyer, you should either write an escalation or you should write your best and final, because we don't know if we're going to get a phone call saying, listen, you know, and negotiating afterwards. So that is the assumption that I make with my buyers, that it should be their best and final if we're competing. If we're not competing, then that's different.
Shawanda McGee, what would you say to people who are, you know, maybe concerned about escalation clauses and trying to make sure they're going to get the best house for their money, they're not going to overpay, but they're also not going to lose it if they're willing to go more?
We competing, right? And so at the end of the day, you got to go into it with the mindset of knowing that there is somebody else who wants and loves this house probably as much as I do. It's not more. And if I really want it, I have to place the value on it that I want to place on it. And so sometimes I think we forget that the buyers are essentially placing value on these homes. They become emotionally attached to these homes, so they're going to place the value on it. And how much they value it is how much you're going to willing to pay. So escalation clauses are guaranteed to happen for a lot, especially in homes that are popular, have a heavy traffic, and are priced well, right? Because the listing agents aren't stupid. They're pricing these homes to create those escalation costs, create those bidding wars. They are doing that because people want homes. People want home ownership. They want to buy homes. So they're going to do escalation clauses. Some people aren't. And like Rainey said, when you don't do escalation clauses, essentially that is your best foot forward. That, I mean, whether you
might get beat
or not,
yeah,
you can always, you may get beat, and you have to be okay with that.
We can also get beat with an escalation clause too, unfortunately, right? That's the quandary that these Shawanda's exactly right. That's the quandary that these buyers are in, is how to go about it, and that's your realtor can guide you through that and what's best for you and give you the options.
Jim, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think it also depends on where the buyer is in the process. So if this is the first offer you're making, you're just started looking and it's a good fit, but you're not, you know, it's not your perfect fit, then maybe you don't put in a huge escalation clause or go in with your highest and best. If it's the 20th home you're looking at and you haven't found anything and you're absolutely in love with it, maybe you approach it differently. So it goes back to, this is one of the key pieces to the relationship between the buyer or seller and their realtor, is the not only the professional advice, but the emotional support and psychological advice that the realtor can provide you to say, listen, we've been looking for homes for 9 months and this is the one you've loved the best. Maybe we are a little more aggressive with this one. Or, you know, all of the things you told me you couldn't compromise on, you'd have to compromise on this one. Let's rethink this. So it there's so many different factors, and it's hard to give a blanket answer. But in some cases, escalation clause is a great tool. In other cases, it may not work. So you have to be willing to have those conversations with your realtor and have them be honest with you as the buyer or seller, and expect them to going to call you out when you're making decisions that are contrary to what you've said before.
Talking to Jim Yockel, CEO of the Greater Rochester Association of Realtors. Lainey Bittner is president of the association and an associate broker at RE/MAX Plus. Shawanda McGee is a licensed realtor, the founder of She's Dope, a women's empowerment group. We're talking about the market, what's going on right now. And when we come back from our only break of the hour, Joe writes to say, I don't believe a slowdown would result in the lowering of prices. Real estate in Rochester was super cheap and way undervalued for a long time. So curious to know if our guests agree with that. Are we going to sort of plateau? Is this like a long-term correction for how much you could get for your money? Where do we go next with this? Our guests will talk about that, and we'll answer some more of your questions via email coming up here. Coming up in our second hour, our guest is Xander Brown, a 2018 graduate of the University of Rochester who has gone home to Flint, Michigan to do work in both activism and journalism. Journalism and telling stories about people who have been long ignored, forgotten, or intentionally set aside by racist systems. Xander Brown's work and her story, next hour.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So Joe is saying that even if there's a slowdown, so to speak, in the housing market, he doesn't think it's going to necessarily result in the lowering of prices. Maybe we wouldn't see as aggressive a set of numbers for buyers to be able to buy houses, or sale prices. But let me ask all three of our guests here. Do you agree with Joe that this is sort of the long-term correction that has been coming to this market for a long time? Lainey, what do you think?
I do. I agree with Joe. I think that is, you know, we're still a very affordable market. We have always been an affordable market. But we have seen some larger increases in the past few years due to the seller's market. And I do think that it is a bit of a correction. So I'm not foreseeing a huge drop. So for buyers that are waiting for, you know, sort of the bottom to drop out of the market and prices to come down significantly, I don't think that's going to happen. I think they'll level out some, as I think they have a little bit recently.
Okay. Shawanda McGee, what do you think?
I totally agree too. As well, like I said, I believe for the next 5 to 10 years, this is going to be consistent. It won't be as crazy or as aggressive, but we have to be realistic that the largest population of are entering the market. The millennials are entering the market right now, and we pegged them as renters at one point. But I think due to everything that has happened in COVID and the changes in the world, they are purchasing homes and becoming homeowners. So the buyers are going to continue to grow. So the market's not going to slow down.
Shawanda's right, and millennials are old now. And I can say that. I can say, you know, I can say that. That's actually not a slur. Millennials, they're not old. But millennials were probably tired of always being assumed to be, you know, this young sort of teenage group. That's not the case. They are adults. They are buying homes, as Shawanda says here. Jim, what would you say about Joe's idea about housing prices long term here?
I would agree that most of the signs are positive. The factors that drive demand are going to persist. There has been for many years a lack of new construction to meet new demand, which, you know, is part of the inventory issue. But keep in mind that even though our market may be increasing a little bit faster, it's not substantially faster. Big cities, coastal areas, the Sun Belt, the markets there are just as crazy. And so we're kind of in line nationally. It seems worse for us because our prices have been dramatically lower. But, you know, go look in Boston and see what the price of a house the same size as your house in Rochester is, and you'll be shocked. So I think the signs are positive that home prices will maintain their value. If demand drops a little bit, we probably won't lose a ton of value, but the intensity may come off a little.
Jim, I got an email from AJ in Canandaigua who says, I wonder what is the role of blind buyers, hedge funds, foreign investors, REITs, etc.? What role is that having in this market and nationally? Jim?
It's a big factor. We just call them institutional or corporate buyers, are buying up large numbers of single-family homes across the country and then turning them into rentals. And that is definitely having an impact on the homes available for sale in our area. And it's pretty complex, but I think bottom line is there is a lot of institutional money that's looking for its best use, and the returns in real estate are better than returns in bonds or other financial instruments. So there's a lot of interest in that, has been for 6 or 7 years. I don't see that going away anytime soon either, and it's just one of the dozen factors that is impacting the availability of homes across the market segments in our region.
Well, I want to return to a subject that is always relevant in this, and Lainey brought it up earlier. So you brought up pricing a home right, pricing it, you know, sort of, for lack of a better term, correctly or wisely. Through the years on this program, when we talk to people in your line of work, there's some differing views on what that exactly means. Do you want to start sort of bidding war by pricing it a little lower than someone's comfortable with? Do you want to shoot for the moon and get as absolutely squeeze every drop of blood out of that stone? You want to be somewhere in the middle? I know there's different views on this, and I wonder if our three guests agree or disagree. I'll start with Lainey on this. Can you elaborate on what you said earlier about pricing a home right?
Yeah, I'm still a little confused by the millennials being old, because that means I'm really old. But yes, sorry, I'm still stuck on that. But yeah,
time is relentless, Lainey.
Sorry, I know. But yes, it absolutely is. There's different theories, there's different philosophies, different ways to go about it, right? So my theory is, you know, you're always going to sit down with a seller, and it's always a conversation with the seller about their specific home and what that means and the condition, as we talked about with Michelle earlier, who has the house she's trying to sell with the rental, right? It's taking all that stuff into consideration, what the condition of the home is, where the location is, what upgrades have you done to the home, all that stuff, and looking at recent sales, right? So you want to look at, I always look, try and look, especially this year, right? Because there was a huge shift. And so if I look a year back, a year ago from today versus looking at 6 months, there's going to be a dramatic difference in the pricing. So you want to look as most recent as possible. So if I can find your exact house that's in your town and within a mile of your, and it looks just like yours, and it sold, you know, 3 weeks ago, I can pretty much tell you what your house is going to most likely sell for. That rarely happens that there's exactly the same house, but that's the general idea. But that's the general idea, right? Is if I can find a house as similar to yours as possible in the similar location, similar condition, all that stuff, and if it recently sold, then we have a pretty good idea of what your house is going to sell for. And then it becomes a conversation with the seller of, okay, you know, do you want to price it? These are the, and then I also look at who you're competing against. What are the other houses on the market that if I have a buyer that's looking in your price point, your neighborhood or your town, who are we going to compete against and how do we want to line up against those, right? Do you want to be, you know, maybe priced a little bit under so you look like a little bit of a value to get more interest in, right? That's the conversation with the seller is how can we position your house for those seller's needs? Because every seller's needs are different, right? Someone may be, I need to get out of here tomorrow, right? And versus someone of, no, I don't have to get out of here tomorrow. I need to get everything I can get out of this house and really coming up with the best strategy for the seller to figure out what that is.
All right. So part of the answer is the seller's needs, especially their time that they need to sell this thing in, et cetera, come into play here. Let's say it's, look, I'm not burning to sell this tomorrow. I'd like to get it sold in the next couple of months. And you come back to me and you say, look, based on your house and all the research that we've done here, it's probably going to sell for around 150. And what would you say to me if I said, great, let's list it for 180?
180 is a bit of a stretch from 150. Shawana knows, she's been there. Shawana's laughing. It's a conversation, right? Is I'm a very data driven agent. I'm going to show you the comps that I'm basing it on, right? And saying, okay, you know, if you want to list it a little bit higher, to me that $30,000 in that price point is significant. If you're talking about a $500,000 house and you want to list it at 530, okay, that's a different conversation. But really, to me, the conversation is if you list it closer to where you should be, that will really benefit you in the long run. That is what we've been seeing in this market is that people that have been pricing their houses appropriately for condition, location, et cetera, that's the one that the buyers flock to, and that's the one that the buyers pay possibly $100,000 over price, right?
Not well, yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the, if you're something that, you know, if your list should be listed at 150 and you're listing it at 200, right, it may sit these days, especially, I mean, maybe in the first quarter of the year it didn't, but now it will. That buyers are a little bit more savvy and unwilling to maybe pay some of those prices on some of those houses.
Shawanda, I heard you laughing there.
Because Shawanda has been there, I'm telling you.
Do you want to add to that? What would you say is the right way, or how do you approach setting the right price?
Like I said, you do your research. You have to do your research on the neighborhood and the market conditions in that current location that you're going to be listing a home in within a mile. Sometimes I even like to look within like a half of a mile sometimes to see what's been sold recently, to see what it's been sold for. Same amount of bedrooms, bathrooms, all of those things. Bedrooms, bathrooms, and updated kitchen get you the best amount of money for your home. For anybody who's listening and looking to list, those things will get your house sold. But those things are very important. So if your kitchen's outdated, but the house down the street is the same size, same bedroom, same bathroom, but their kitchen is updated, chances are their house is going to sell for more than yours is. So just being transparent with your clients and being honest and showing them your data, like Raymond said, like it's the data's here. Like they say, we can't fight science, we can't fight facts, right? So if the facts is showing that your house isn't going to sell for no more than 150. We may be able to get 155. We may be able to push it, all right? But you don't want to – I'm telling you, the good price, the good number is 150. Why would we go 180 so you can just sit on your property and then be angry with me when we have to lower the price later on? Let's just start in a good space and get you the people in here. Let's get them in. We don't always want to start a bidding war, though. So you gotta finesse it. You got to find the perfect balance.
All right, Jim Yockel, anything to add there?
No, those guys are great. I'm not licensed. I don't work with consumers, so I'll let them have that one.
All right, let me grab one more phone call, and then I got a great email that I'm going to try to squeeze in for the end of the hour. So, Teresa, I'll get your email in a second. Let me get Grant in Brighton on the phone. Go ahead, Grant.
Hi, yes, thank you, Evan. I just had a question, a quick little bit of context. I grew up in the Boston area, Boston suburbs. I've been living in Rochester for the last 20 years and kind of going back to that area quite often, kind of looking at real estate. there's a significant difference between that and other areas. I heard one of the, I think it was Mr. Yonklin, mentioned that correction, and I was just wondering how he or any of the other guests would see that, how the correction would play out. Is it just kind of up and down? It's kind of like a hot market, cold market? Or is there going to be a change that, you know, prices generally will go up maybe 1%, 3%, 7% mm-hmm. per year? Mm-hmm. Anyone want to clarify that?
Yeah, I'll kick that to Jim in a second. But you say you're from Boston, Grant, huh?
I grew up there, yeah.
Say Park. Come on, man.
I knew you were
going
there.
I don't hear
any
Boston in there.
I knew you were going there.
No, I'm not going to play that game.
No, that's great. And let me kick this to Jim, because I think the question's a really good one, Jim, on what we're actually talking about here. Go ahead, Jim Yockel.
Yeah, that it's a great question. And I guess maybe the word correction isn't the right word. Maybe more of a normalizing of the market is how you'd want to term it. The reality is, for the most part, real estate prices go up. They don't go down. You know, many people have said they aren't making any more land. So it's a limited resource and generally increases. The rate of that increase depends on all kinds of factors that are hard to put together. But I think what we're seeing, what we're likely to see until there is significant new construction, specifically new construction at some of the lower price points, I think you're going to continue to see this constrained supply, which increases prices. It'll probably go down a little bit. You can't have 22 offers on every property forever. But I think the caller's probably right that instead of going up 16%, it probably goes up more in the 2, 3, 4% like we're used to from 10 years ago. But I don't see – your correction has some negative connotations as things going down. I would say probably more normalized over the next few years. But, you know, Shawanda said a couple of times she doesn't see it changing significantly in the next 5 years, and I'd have to agree with that, maybe calming down a little bit, but not – significantly.
Yeah, I think Grant's pointing an important point. The word correction does carry that connotation, but even 1 to 3% per year, I mean, it's significant. It's just not what we've seen maybe in the last 12, 24 months. Okay. Grant, I hope that answers the question. Let me get Teresa's email, who says, Evan, we sold our home in the city last spring. We received 17 offers after 3 days of showings. Ultimately, we accepted an offer for 44% over the asking price. Mm-hmm. And then Teresa says, I wonder what your guests think about the following. 3 offers were cash only. What are the pros and cons of that? No offers included an inspection, which was to our advantage due to the age of the house, but it seems risky to buyers. The escalation clauses were all over the place. One even included the info that they were approved by their lender for twice what they were offering. However, when we gave them the chance to up the price based on that borrowing power, they declined. What was the point of giving that information if they were not willing to use that power? Finally, we got 2 love letters gushing over the house and promising to take care of it. Are those a common tool that buyers are trying to set themselves apart, and are they legal? Let's start with that one. Hey, Jim, love letters, are those legal or illegal?
Love letters are, you know, legal in the sense that if you make it only about the house, they are very, very likely to have violations of fair housing law. So we recommend that people don't use love letters or accept love letters. It's just the chances of it being a problem are far, far greater than not. But they're technically legal.
Okay. And I think, Shawanda McGee, based on history, one of the concerns with love letters was just one tool in a system that kept buyers of color out of houses.
Yes. So love letters was definitely a tool to keep people of color out of houses, because it was a way of love letters was a way of people, you know, confessing or professing their love for a home and how they would love it and raise their families and stuff in it. But, you know, when certain names were placed on paperwork, you were already, you know, seen and seen as a person of color. So you were already denied previous. But once when they started to do love letters, it gave people a chance, a fighting chance. And once they took it away, it's like another form of redlining, I guess, in a sense.
All right. So it sounds to me like be very careful with that if you're trying to do that. I think most people these days are just trying to look for an advantage, but just be careful. Teresa also says, I'll ask Lainey about this one. Three offers were cash only. What are the pros and cons of cash only?
The pros of cash is you don't, the buyer doesn't have to go through a mortgage process, right? If you accept an offer with mortgage, which most people have to get a mortgage, but they have to go through the process with the bank, and that process includes an appraisal for the house. And so in this type of market where houses are selling for significantly over list, if they were paying significantly over list, the house could possibly have issues with appraisal, and with cash that goes away. So that is one of the biggest advantage of a cash offer for a seller.
Okay. Shawanda, she says there were no offers, including an inspection. It seemed our advantage due to the age of the house that we were selling, but it seemed risky to buyers. What do you tell people, Shawanda, about no inspections?
As a seller, it's amazing, especially if you have an older home. So that is very true. It's amazing if they don't want an inspection, because then you're not required, to fix certain things. But for buyers, I tell my buyers all the time, get an inspection, especially first-time home buyers. Always get an inspection, because if you've never owned a home, you don't know what you're walking into, right? So you want to protect yourself and be safe and be prepared for anything that could go wrong. And inspections help you do that. So buyers get inspections, sellers take advantage if they don't want an inspection.
Well, and we've hit the end of the hour. It always flies when we're talking real estate. I think we've got a better picture of the market now. It's going to be an interesting few months, usually slower in the winter. And it will be fascinating in 2022 to see what the ostensible correction, or at least the pullback a little bit, looks like, because this market has been so hot. Shawanda McGee, thanks for making time for the program, Shawanda.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
And from the Greater Rochester Association of Realtors, Jim Yockel, CEO. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Evan.
And Lainey Bittner, the president and an associate broker at RE/MAX Plus. Thank you, Lainey.
My pleasure. Thanks, Evan.
More connections coming up in a moment.